Hey guys, welcome to the Fans of Wrestling Radio Network. Here I am, Patrick, along with Danny Danger and Matt the Mouth for another edition of Sports Entertainment Center, where we're going to be reviewing Backlash. It is SmackDown's first individual show since the roster split, as I like to call it. And well, guys, overall, your thoughts on Backlash? We had new champions, three new champions crowned, and I gotta say, one show with not a lot of filler.
You know, that's my least favorite thing about WWE programming, and why I feel so much of the 5 hours a week is missable, because so much of it just feels like filler, like it doesn't matter. And everything in the past couple weeks, that's what I've talked about. Everything has to matter. And I felt like everything on this show had consequence. And it wasn't, they had a opening, they opened with Shane and Daniel Bryan, and I don't have a recap right in front of me, and I'm drinking straight from a bottle of Jameson whiskey. So if I mess up something, just go ahead and chalk it up to that. But you know, they started with the mic work, and then that pretty much was done for most of the show. There were no long segments. It was wrestling, and it was really good wrestling.
Yeah, each of the matches, I mean, there were only six matches announced at the start of the show. And so each match had a fair amount of time, to kind of build a story, and kind of invest fans in. I mean, there were some matches there that just didn't draw fans in. I felt like Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, just they had a hard time drawing fans in. And I think that's because I chalk that more up to what we've talked about in the past with Dolph Ziggler, is they've beaten him down so much that nobody believes he'll do anything. And if they do, they're not really that excited about it. Like when he fought Ambrose at the last pay-per-view, for the world title, the match had no heat because nobody believed that Dolph Ziggler was actually going to win the belt. And it was almost kind of the same thing with this one. It didn't seem that anybody really believed that The Miz was going to lose to Dolph Ziggler. And so the match, although it was good and it was, technically sound and everything, and they went out there and they busted, but the crowd just didn't get into it. You know, the room of people that I was with, they all, we were all kind of talking amongst ourselves. We weren't as invested in the match as we were later matches like AJ and Ambrose or even the six woman elimination match for the new women's championship.
You know, that's interesting. And at no point did I think that Dolph Ziggler was going to win this match. At no point. But I loved it. I was actually really getting watching at home, getting drawn into that match. And I thought the work was stellar. And I'm really, the last several weeks since that promo where Miz went off on Daniel Bryan and he had tons of passion, I've really been getting more into the Miz as both a character and a wrestler. I love the match. I mean, I thought the work was stellar, although it had the downfall, like you say. The outcome to me was never in doubt.
We had a great show. Real quick, let me go ahead and go down these matches that we had on Backlash. First, Baron Corbin defeated Apollo Crews on the pre-show. Becky Lynch defeated Alexa Bliss, Carmella, Naomi, Natalia, and Nikki Bella to become the first SmackDown Women's Champion. The Usos defeated the Hype Bros to make it to the tournament finals of the tag titles. The Miz defeated Dolph Ziggler to retain the IC title. Bray Wyatt defeated Randy Orton by forfeit, then went ahead and lost a no-holds-barred match to Kane. Heath Slater and Rhino defeated the Usos to become the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and Heath Slater, of course, winning a SmackDown contract, so now he can get a double wide. And AJ Styles defeated Dean Ambrose to become the new WWE World Champion. I gotta say, to me, happy Becky Lynch won. Definitely all about it. I will say Alexa Bliss really looked good, and I was very impressed with her work.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway from that match is Alexa Bliss kind of stepping out into her own, not just as a wrestler, but as a character as well. Like we were commenting on, I guess it was after the Tower of Doom spot, and then Alexa kind of runs in. And she goes to pin Natty first, and she can't pin Natty, and she gets frustrated, picks Natty up, throws her out of the ring. Goes over to pin Nikki, tries to pin Nikki. Nikki kicks out. She picks her up, throws her butt out of the ring. And then she, like, stands up, and she goes, and, like, does, like, a little pout stomp over to Carmella, the third person there to try to pin her. And then she kicks up. She's like, what? She throws, like, a little tantrum and stuff. And it was just, I mean, the way she does things like that, her character and her persona and mannerisms and facial expressions, they seem natural. They're a little over the top, but they don't seem forced. They don't seem ridiculously so. And I think it's little things like that, along with her athleticism and her ring work, which is continuing to get better, that could help make her, you know, a longtime player in the women's division.
Yeah, Alexa's character suits her so well, doesn't it? I mean, she really looks like she is a giant bitch. And I mean, that's perfect for her. I don't know if it was planned that she was at this point, if she was going to win on SmackDown to go on to be the number one contender, but she definitely staked her her place as to why she would deserve it after that match. The worst part of the match, though, oh my gosh, that Naomi going over and then trying to take Natalya in was embarrassingly bad for about 6 or 7 seconds, and then
like three times.
Right. I mean, it was basically a botched move.
Skin cat head scissors. Yeah.
But for the most part, though, you look at it in general, the match itself was good, and Becky Lynch winning. Well, it was the opening match, and sometimes, people don't care for the opening match. You got to understand this, this is what got people excited for the rest of the show. And to me, it was a great way to make people happy to begin Backlash.
Until the main event, favorite match of the show. That was my favorite match of the show. It was a couple matches drug on, like the Usos and the High Bros and Ziggler and Miz. I was like, man, are they just going to give us the best match of the show, like at the first one, and it's all downhill from here?
Miz and Dolph got a lot of time. I was very surprised about that.
Everybody got a lot of time. That's what I'm saying. Like, every single match seemed to have a long, no match felt rushed, Every match seemed to have a decent amount of time to go in there and tell a story. Even like the Hype Bros and the Usos, which essentially was just one of two matches that the winner was going to have. So you would think that sometimes that first match is a little bit faster than the actual title match.
That was my favorite thing about this show. At no point did it feel long at all, but every match had plenty of time, and that's they don't need to book, they don't need to overbook. SummerSlam was ridiculous in length. WrestleMania, by the time you got to the quote-unquote main event with Triple H and Roman Reigns, I was exhausted. It's like an endurance test. But that pay-per-view felt really, really fresh. Like they didn't have a ton of matches. They didn't overbook it. They just really booked good wrestling. And I did. I don't want to bag on the women's match. I did enjoy that. I thought it was good. And they didn't try to get cute with it or smart. They just put the belt on the most obvious and most popular person in the division, Becky Lynch, so that she can be the babyface and have it for a while. They didn't try to get stupid and have her chase, because I don't think that would have worked. It would have gone over like a lead balloon. But this pay-per-view, I was raving to you about it, Patrick, after it was over, because it just felt like a 2 hour show.
It felt like a 1995 or 1996 2 hour pay-per-view that they had.
Yeah, it was longer. I mean, my favorite In Your House, and I'd have to look up the name, but my favorite In Your House 2 hour pay-per-view only had 4 matches on it. So you can let everything breathe and not have filler and not have BS where you have the writers working, to come up with stuff that's not as good as just letting the wrestlers have time in the ring. And you don't have to go 4.5 hours to do it.
Yeah, so Randy Orton still not cleared. So the match was canceled. Bray Wyatt wins by forfeit. And then he loses to Kane thanks to Randy Orton's interference. When Bray Wyatt needed a win, of all people, you make him lose to Kane? I mean, I understand, you know, Randy Orton interferes, causes Bray the match. Supposedly, that's going to continue the feud. I think that you could continue the feud without that happening. So I'm all against that whole thing. What do you guys think about, you know, Kane going over Bray Wyatt?
It's a good thing Bray Wyatt's such a good talker. But even with him being a talker, it's clear where he is in the booker's eyes, because he loses all the time. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's been a subject that Patrick and I have kind of talked about over time, is that Bray Wyatt rarely wins, like, period. Like, the only, like, he, I think it's difficult for fans to take him as a serious threat, because although he talks and he does spooky stuff, he then goes out and loses. There's not a feud that he wins and wins and wins, and then eventually the hero gets one up on him. The feuds with Bray Wyatt, most of them are seemingly slapped together. Bray Wyatt cuts some wacky promos, and then when they finally have their match, he loses. And then he kind of fizzles out for a little while. They don't really seem to give Bray any big long things. And I'm wondering if at this point it's because they feel he's injury prone. They don't want to give him any long programs and then him get hurt and him not be able to complete the program.
That's an interesting point. It's just so strange that they could have him. I mean, he was such, I mean, I felt he was, you know, not a number one or number two guy, but he was near the top of the card for guys that you could count on to deliver an interesting promo. And he's always a hard worker. So it just feels like they're taking this guy who should be a much bigger star, and they're knocking him down a peg for whatever reason. And it makes no sense. So that I'm curious if that could be it, because he has had tons of injuries.
Yeah. And they're very, you know, they're his ankle and then his back, like, and it would get better, and then it would start bothering him again, and it would start bothering him again. Like, you know, the apparently the date, or like that afternoon before he was supposed to wrestle the Undertaker, he twisted his ankle.
Right.
So they said, or the day before something. So they said he was walking like all day in like a brace/boot, walking all day on that, leading up to his match with the Undertaker. And then his time to get in costume, you know, get in his gear, and he took the boot off, and then he went out and wrestled. And so that's kind of, I think they kind of attributed some of that to why the match didn't feel as big or as important as it should have, I guess, because they felt that, Bray was kind of limited, and they kind of had to work around that. So I don't know if they're also kind of holding that against him as well. He had the big thing with the Undertaker lined up, and it was supposed to be this huge thing, and it kind of pittered out because he got injured.
And he's been injured on house shows too, hasn't he?
Yeah, to get injured and hurt his back, or I think his back and his ankle are pretty much the two big ones that, like, they're aggravating injuries. You know, he'll hurt him and he'll be off for a couple months, and then he'll come back and they won't really do much with him. And by the time they start trying to get him anywhere and take him anywhere and move him any place on the card, he gets hurt again.
And you know what's really weird about this match is that Randy Orton was quote unquote not cleared, but he got into the ring the next night at the SmackDown house show in Fairfax.
Yeah, but he didn't take any bumps, from what I hear.
Right, but he didn't take any bumps, but he gave an RKO.
That's a pretty big bump for me.
Yeah, I mean, he did give the RKO to Bray at Backlash as well, so.
So it's just such a weird thing that they go ahead, you know, they're trying to work you. And if he is, I mean, we talked about how bad an idea it was for him to take all these stiff Brock Lesnar shots at SummerSlam. And now Brock, and of course, Brock hasn't been back, and Randy Orton is supposed to be there, and he's, you know, how injured is he? Is that legit, or is this, I mean, this couldn't have been just storyline. They wouldn't cancel a pay-per-view match. Vince McMahon hates to go ahead and advertise matches that aren't going to happen. So this had to be something last minute where yeah, they didn't.
Well, I mean, you saw they did that angle, like, on the show. Like, it was pretty much, people seemed to think, like, on Saturday that he wasn't cleared, but they kept advertising the match, and it was, I think it was during the actual show and not the pre-show that they showed Bray Wyatt attacking him in the back and, like, slamming his leg in the in one of the heavy doors or something.
And it was during the show.
And that was why he couldn't compete, not because of his, you know, failed concussion impact test that he did on Saturday, but because Bray Wyatt messed up his knee. So when he comes out in his gear with just, like, his knee taped up a little bit, just to show you, like, here, look, he's injured, guys. Remember that from earlier today.
Well, then, like, yeah. Matt said, though, good thing that Bray Wyatt can talk, because at this point, I don't think he brings much value with all the losses that he has had. And I'm not sure how it's going to, I mean, we know this is going to continue. And what does it mean for Bray Wyatt? I don't know. I'm starting to lose faith in him. You know, I think, like, for example, I look at Rusev and how they build him right back up after, you know, taking a few losses after the Cena feud. But they've done wonders with him. Why can't they do something similar with Bray? I just don't get it.
It's just such a weird thing. It's just such a weird thing because he's over. His entrance is over, right? I mean, yeah. am I misinterpreting it?
I mean, the character is over. Yeah, as far as I know of, but, like, other than his entrance and, you know, and, like, him saying some wacky stuff, like, people kind of lose it. Like, they don't really, they have trouble connecting with him. And I think that's because he's gone a lot, and B, he loses a lot.
And he was supposed to be a babyface until he got hurt.
Yeah.
Well, there's such a weird thing with him too, which was the pay-per-view. It was the one right before SummerSlam, I believe. And what was it? Payback? And sure. he was the main. I think it was Payback, but he was the main one on the poster. He was the main one in the advertising, which had obviously been done, you know, a month or two before. And he wasn't even on the show.
Yeah,
do you remember this? This was a couple months ago. I mean, he was the main one who came in, and he's not even on the damn show.
Yeah, and that's just because he probably got hurt a little bit, and then they decided not to put him in a big match. But, like, it's almost to the point where they need to build up, like, two or three people as a Wyatt family that are strong wrestlers. You know, when Luke Harper comes back, and, you know, I mean, screw Eric Rowan, he's not that good. But get Harper, maybe somebody else, and pretty much have Bray just be their manager. Have him be, like, their full-time manager, does all the talking. He'll get in there and throw some moves and bump. You know, maybe throw a Sister Abigail in every once in a while, but, like, it's pretty much to the point, especially, you know, if he's going to get injured with his back and his ankle, he could still be a manager and hobble out to the ring, you know, or come out or appear, you know, in the rocking chair, or appear on a video during one of his guys' matches or something. You know, I think his best days are as more as Paul Bearer, less as Percy Pringle, so to speak.
Oh man, good friend. Love Percy. That's actually a really good idea, especially considering how weak they are on the tag team division. And Luke Harper is supposed to be back soon.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing something like that. And at least, you know, because Bray's whole deal is talking. His ring work, as we just talked about, is the least over part, and it's just because the creative is so weird with him. I'd love to see Luke Harper come back and be in a tag team, because with his look, Luke Harper's not going to be pushed to the top. He's the most underrated worker they have. Luke Harper's great, but he's not a WWE look type of guy.
No.
To be on top.
On the indies, he pretty much was the same look. His beard wasn't as long, but he was, like, his gimmick was that he was like a trucker. Like, that was his gimmick, was like he was like a pissed off drunken trucker. You know, he wore the dirty white beater and the ripped up jeans, And he was, his finisher was like the truck stop slam or something like that, you know? That was kind of his gimmick as Brody Lee. And then he comes up as the Wyatt family and pretty much keeps, you know, he just grows his beard out a little longer and stops talking as much. But I mean, yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, his feud with Dean Ambrose over the IC title and stuff kind of showed us that he can, that he can carry on good matches as a singles competitor.
But creatively, I think that would be something if Bray was just a mouthpiece. Because I don't know, it does frustrate me a lot that Bray Wyatt should be a much higher up on the card type of guy, and he kind of is, but he does jobs for everybody, so he's really not.
Yeah, he's kind of upper. He's kind of the guy you put. He's a placeholder for. He's essentially Kane, long before Kane ever was this in his career. Like he's, they see him as strong, you know, like, but he's basically a placeholder feud. Like, okay, so Brock Lesnar's not going to be back for a while. We don't really have much else going on for Randy Orton. Okay, I guess we'll put him against Bray Wyatt. You know, Dean Ambrose just won the belt. We really don't have a big feud for him, so let's put him against Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but at least, you know, at least it was. Him going under to Kane is probably the most bothersome thing about the pay-per-view to me. And so if I can say that, then that's, I mean, it was still a damn good show.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to the tag team title match here. And Heath Slater, Rhino defeated the Usos. I will say, if you're going to keep the titles away from American Alpha, this is a great way to go, because Heath Slater finally gets a contract, and there's a lot of things. While there's, you know, a comedy act, there's, you know, for, I think it's getting over with the fans. And when something's over with the fans, you want to work it and you want to do it. And, you know, until eventually people are tired of it, or, you know, you job them to death. So to
me, it is a comedy act. It is a comedy act, Patrick, but it's a comedy act with a lot of heart. It really is. People actually like Heath Slater. And there's a lot of wrestlers that really aren't even liked. So yeah, they got something and they have a story. And I don't know how far they're going to take it, but they should keep riding with it for now. There's no reason to stop.
Yeah, my thought was that they would win the title match again, you know, beat the Usos, and then, you know, within the first month they would lose the belt to the Usos, and so when Alpha comes back, Alpha jumps right in against the Usos for the belts. But like you said, this thing with Heath and Rhino is so over, you know, like you could tell that by his after promo and all this, you know, how over it is with the crowd. And they made his shirt came out yesterday that says, you know, I got kids, I need this job, or something's like what the shirt says. and so, like, yeah, you need to just run with it. And I think you probably need the titles on them to help justify giving them a bigger spot on the show and to keep them winning. Because it becomes this hilarious Cinderella story. Like, it's a newer version of similar, like, when with Jamie Noble, you know, when and Nydia and stuff. But it's kind of updated, and they've, you know, they're able to play on a few of those jokes, but still create a lot of new ones too.
Ooh, great reference. Great reference.
I mean, when double great aunt, whatever, died and left him like $900,000, and he and Nydia, that's when he bought Nydia the fake boobs, and they bought the double wide and the John Deere tractor and all that, you know?
Yeah, all that was awesome. So I'm happy where they're going to go with this, and see what, you know, happens. I mean, eventually I could see the Usos winning and then American Alpha coming back and then they, you know, chasing the titles. So you can do different things with that. So to me, definitely an interesting choice and give them a lot of options for now. So we move on to our main event. AJ Styles defeated Dean Ambrose to become the first ever wrestler to hold the IWGP title, the NWA title, the TNA world title, and the WWE world title.
Georgia and Southern wrestling is starting to take over the WWE. My God, it's amazing.
That's it. I mean, Heath Slater's West Virginia. That's technically the South.
It's the South.
But he trained out of Georgia, so Georgia likes to claim him.
Yeah, Georgia likes to claim Heath Slater still.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he was a Mr. Hughes guy at WWA 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he trained in Atlanta. And he wrestled in the Church of Southern Wrestling in Cornelia, Georgia. That's where AJ Styles came from. Xavier Woods spent some time there.
What was Heath's name on the indie scene? You might have had a much closer relationship with him than we know.
You know, I don't think I knew, although I just said this the other day at that show we were both at, that I recognized somebody and we actually had known each other. It had just been, you know, a ton of years and many concussions and I didn't remember him. I'm looking that up right now because I'm curious.
David Heath is Gangrel, right?
David Heath is Gangrel.
Yes, yeah. You're stretching it, Danny. I mean, you're trying, but quite a stretch, I would say. He was going by Heath Miller.
Heath Miller, yeah.
Yeah, and he started. Yeah, okay. He started around 2004, and 2005 is when NWA Wildside. Basically, and he may have shown up there, or he may have shown up when it was NWA Anarchy. That seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, he was right there for that transition period when it was NWA Anarchy.
But but Cornelia definitely can claim the world champion in AJ Styles.
And you know, I will say though, to me, it was just a great moment. For AJ Styles, when you think about AJ, you think about the guy who made it to WCW and then they got bought out by WWE and his services were not retained. He went with TNA, you know, became the guy there, you know, let's also remember the time he spent in the Ring of Honor as well. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a tag team champion, a pure champion.
He went to the Super 8 for ECWA and Jim Kettner, and I think he lost in the finals to Donovan Morgan. He was all over the place.
He helped make TNA what it was, and what attracted all those other bigger names that left WWE. And when TNA did not value him as the guy and did not want to pay him as the guy, well, he went to Japan and became the guy. And I think that AJ Styles with the Bullet Club helped attract so many more American fans to New Japan that hadn't been there for years. And then from there, he came back here, got one of the biggest reactions ever on his debut at the Royal Rumble. They really finally gave him his due. And they've treated him, even with the losses, they've treated AJ Styles like a main event top guy. And, you know, a lot of people still have a lot of issues with the fact that Chris Jericho beat him at WrestleMania. Well, you know, we like to talk about, you know, people who benefit from losses. I mean, has AJ Styles really lost anything from that loss? I mean, he's main evented world title pay-per-views. He's beat John Cena twice. I mean, and now he is the top guy for the SmackDown Live brand. So what else can you say except for AJ Styles is one of the best wrestlers in the world and WWE recognizes it. For as much as we as fans and many people out there like to crap on WWE and whatever they do, we need to remember the little things is that, you know, they do and can appreciate talent when they have it. And when you can't, you know, and when you cannot avoid it.
No, they have definitely been a lot better at recognizing talent. It's something, you know, it's something I've been frustrated with. I mean, I think a week ago I was a little bit different in some of this, but you know, heck, they offered, you know, back years ago before TNA, they offered AJ Styles $500 a week to go to Cincinnati and Heartland. So they were always aware of him, but they never thought of him as superstar caliber. And it took AJ going around the world and making himself into a superstar. But when he came in, I mean, he walked in, and a guy of his size, and I don't mean his personal stature, I mean his literal height, you know, they don't come in, you know, they have to prove themselves. But he got that huge pop at the Royal Rumble when people, you know, they had that slow screen come up, and when people realizes it says the word phenomenal and it's this new entrance music, oh shit, this is AJ, and everybody, you know, mass pop at the Rumble, really, it had to open their eyes that, okay, this guy is, we don't really have to push this guy. We just have to show this guy off. They didn't have to go ahead and do much to create him because he came in. It's something I've been thinking about lately with WWE. You bring in these guys who have these established names. You know, look what's happening with NXT. Who are the big stars there? You know, Bobby Roode, who is a guy they didn't make, but they did give great music to. Shinsuke Nakamura, who they didn't make, but have helped give that awesome entrance to. And they just let them do their thing. AJ Styles, similar. They just show him off. I mean, it's different, you know. I mean, heck, back in the 90s, they would have thrown polka dots on somebody or given, you know, Barry Windham the name the Stalker or thrown somebody under a hood or something like that. So all the credit in the world to WWE for letting these guys, you know, go.
Well, some of them. I mean, some of them they take out from under the hood, and they kind of go,
you know, I'm in a good mood, so I'm just ignoring the fact that the guy that you're talking about has basically talked about wanting to go back to Mexico, you know, and because he's just so unhappy and told it's going to get worse. And it's the weirdest thing because you have, all right, we're talking about Andrade Cien Almas, however badly I pronounce that, in NXT. You know, they took his hood off and they gave him suspenders, which are goofy as hell. He just looks weird coming out.
Yeah.
It's a look for some guys. I don't think it's a look that fits him. But he was over and had more charisma with the mask as Mascara Dorado, right? I got that right.
La Sombra.
I'm sorry. I don't watch tons of Lucha. I get the guys confused. But yes, La Sombra.
Gran Metalik is Dorada.
Matt, are you saying that all Mexicans look alike to you?
You're not from Mexico, are you?
No, I'm not. So I could care less, but let's upset our Mexican listeners, you know, by all means.
All Mexicans are wearing hoods, they all look alike, yes.
All right.
My point, however, was going to be that Gran Metalik, with his mask on CWC, has been over, but Almas, who that tournament kind of seemed like it would have been like tailor made for him, taking the hood off has lost his charisma.
Well, I mean, it's necessarily not, but I think that in the role that he's been given, it's not working. I think he needs to be retooled. But you know what? If I'm Cien Almas, dude, he can go back to Mexico and make lots of money. If he's just going to be stuck here doing a gimmick that's not working, having people boo you when you're supposed to be a babyface, and no fault of his own because he's doing what he's been told, you know, I want to see him either. He needs to take matters into his own hands, as I'm sure that they would allow him to, with some extent, and try new things, or if he's not willing, and they're not going to give him anything different, if he wants to leave, by all means, I mean, I think he'd still make lots of dough by going back to Mexico.
You know, we talked about the creative, and I know we got totally on a few tangents here. a good conversation, but we got on some tangents. They are really weird with, because look who they put Almas with on the first two NXT takeovers. I mean, in his first one, he worked who? Ty Dillinger?
Yeah, worked Dillinger in one.
Yeah, I mean, he's Dillinger is basically an enhancement guy who's gotten over to at least some sort of star level, because fans really just like his gimmick and he plays it well, and he got himself over.
With Ty Dillinger, I mean, he's been on NXT for a while now, and so he's a name they know and recognize, and, you know, I don't necessarily think that people are tired of him. I think that his Perfect 10 gimmick is starting to get over with people because he's just being there, and it's actually something that people enjoy. So,
Those takeover crowds, too, in front of those he's super over to the takeover crowds.
I mean, he was over at the NXT match that he had a week or two ago. I can't remember. Or was that maybe that was the takeover match that he was in? I can't remember.
But then Almas' second takeover match was against Bobby Roode. And after that glorious entrance, who the hell is going to boo Bobby Roode?
Nobody.
So that's what I mean. The creative is like, you know, who's the babyface and who's the heel? Because the fans are cheering for the other guys. So that's weird decisions being made. But again, the king of Georgia wrestling, the king of the South, and now the king of the world is AJ Styles.
Yep. And that is awesome. I'm really excited. And with that, you know, we had SmackDown, and we have some challengers now. We have a new number one contender for the women's title in Alexa Bliss. I think she's performed very well, and she's a great challenger, not someone people will expect to win. So I like it that for the most part, most likely, Becky Lynch's first title defense at No Mercy will be a successful win. So I'm happy for that.
Yeah, that's the only thing is I really like Alexa Bliss. So if they're, you know, going to do what seems to make sense and just have Becky Lynch get an easy win, I maybe would have had it be somebody else. But I think that Alexa Bliss is probably going to be my top heel in the division.
Well, if you look at the options, right, there's currently three heels. Right. You know, Carmella's going to be with Nikki. And then you have Alexa Bliss and Natalya. I mean, Natalya could have been another good choice, but you just had him feuding for a while, so maybe they want to separate those two. And the fact that Alexa Bliss has really looked good in her matches, I think that that's a good option. And, you know, let's be honest, Alexa Bliss may never be the top girl in the SmackDown women's division. So in this,
depends how you rank them. Well, depending on how you rank them, you know, to some she's the number one. I'm trying to be clever because she's, you know, pretty attractive.
Honor, and you told us this last week.
You know, she looks good in her role and in her Harley Quinn cosplay. It's really good.
No, I get it. I understand. Schoolboy crush, you mentioned this last week.
Heath Slater finally signed his contract on SmackDown Live, so now he is with the brand. That was awesome. And we have another addition to SmackDown Live, as Jack Swagger has now joined the ranks.
He left Raw. That happened. I forgot that happened.
Yep. He has left Raw and joined SmackDown, so he can be a misused talent there.
I'm surprised that they didn't. I don't know why you wouldn't do some sort of big trade and make a big deal, multi-episode thing about.
It's too early for a trade. Superstars. It's only been a month.
Yeah, but it's so my contract ran up, so now I'm on. I don't know. I feel that's just so passive, or, you know, my contract's up, so now I'm on the other show. I don't know. I hope I would like to get, just because as we were talking the other day, Patrick, there's some fun trades we'd like to see.
Yeah, there's only one trade I want to see, and that is Kalisto for Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't know if if this is true or not, but I read a rumor that they're considering adding a Cruiserweight division on SmackDown Live. Not sure if this is true, but I'll tell you, they are loaded with Cruiserweights now, as they've brought in a lot of names, and I wouldn't blame them if they try that, but...
But the problem is it requires you... Eventually, they're going to have to create a belt for the Cruiserweights to fight over. And if they do Cruiserweights on both sides, they're eventually going to have to create two more belts. And we're going to fall into this pit that we talked about when they were doing the brand split of having every single match on every single main show be for a championship. It just becomes overblown, and it becomes just – you have too many championships that they all seem to lose meaning.
I mean, it's true, but – that's WWE. They just want props at this point.
Yeah, it's just weird. I would really have preferred if they put the Cruiserweights on one show and they put the women on another and they put the tag team on another. So they don't have the divisions that are like, I mean, look how weak the tag team tournament was to get eight teams for SmackDown. You had to bring in the Headbangers basically for a one shot, and then you had to put a team that was with a guy who technically didn't even have a job for another shot. And then you got like the Vaudevillains, who don't even get entrances anymore. You've already beaten the Hype Brother Bros, which I hate. I hate that they've beaten them. I really like their potential, and maybe it's just me. I mean, nobody else may see that, but so really, there's only a few quote-unquote top teams. It's Alpha is at the top, and then you've got the Usos, and the Heath Slater Rhino thing may just be kind of a fad. Who knows how long that's going to last, because, you know, we're not going to be talking about that in a year or even necessarily 6 months
or even the next 5 minutes. Randy Orton took a bump finally. He got attacked by Eric Rowan. So does that mean the Wyatt family have reunited?
At least those two, I guess, for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. They break him up. They put him together. Break him up. I mean, they're trying to tie the Big Show's flip-flopping record.
Oh God. Well, when you do that so often, it just makes you have to keep up with it. I mean, you shouldn't have to keep up with something. You should be able to watch an angle on TV, and then after it's over, remember everything about it. And if you don't, then it really didn't get over to you. And that is pretty much a paraphrase from Dave Meltzer. And we can't, you know, with some of these stuff, with these constant turns, I can't remember who and who. I mean, it's as bad as Stephanie being a babyface and a heel on the same exact show. It's just, you just start to not care when too much of the flipping happens.
Yeah, well, you know, at this point, I'm not sure what to think of it. Again, my excitement for, you know, for Bray Wyatt is on a low right now, so we'll see. John Cena and Dean Ambrose defeat AJ Styles and not James Ellsworth as The Miz attacks Ellsworth and the he did not pick Papa Hills. Well, you know, it was too late in the, you know, to get a quick flight. You know, they couldn't send the jet out in time for the main event. But so John Cena and Dean Ambrose are victorious here, and Dean Ambrose then hits the dirty deeds on John Cena to close the show. But we have the main event for WWE's No Mercy of AJ Styles versus John Cena versus Dean Ambrose for the WWE World title.
It's a weird main event. I'm not sure that they wanted to do AJ and John Cena, since he just beat John Cena, and they don't want to beat John Cena a third time, which is completely understandable because obviously he's still a superstar. And then the other choice, it seems, is to go with the rematch with AJ and Dean Ambrose, and they just had a fantastic match on the pay-per-view. We didn't really talk about it, but they went all out. So I guess creatively just putting them all into the blender and having it be different, and then one guy doesn't have to even take a pinfall. I guess that's, I think that's what they're doing. It seems pretty obvious, and it's fine. It's not a major show. I'm not a fan of the major shows when they get into the three ways and four ways and they add in extra people. But I guess it's on the secondary show. It's like No Mercy. It's a little bit better.
So Danny, are you excited about this main event?
I think it's interesting. It's the problem I have is, like Matt was saying, is they end up doing three ways and four ways and stuff so frequently that it's not, they're not as special as they kind of once were. I mean, it's like a gimmick match, you know? I mean, it's essentially what it is. So it's, you should use it sparingly as opposed to just like slapping guys together all the time and have multi-mans. And I mean, I understand you have only so many hours of, you have so many hours of TV you have to do, so you have to mix things up. But at the same time, I think triple threat matches specifically sometimes fall into this kind of pattern where, you know, they kind of start off with the three-man spots and then, okay, one guy's out on the floor, the other two guys wrestle for a little bit, then one of them goes out to the floor again, and another duo wrestles, and then another one goes out and the other duo wrestles, and like they kind of get in this loop, and I don't know, it almost becomes like it's a difficult match to keep the fans engaged in sometimes. So I don't know.
The triple threat psychology is you really don't work together, and you need to break up every pinfall, as opposed to having times in a three-way or four-man where it's elimination style. Like at our favorite tournament, the Scenic City Invitational, available on VOD and DVD from At Woo Wrestling, that was an elimination. So there was incentive for guys to go ahead and work together. There was incentive for that to happen, but in triple threat, the first pinfall ends the match. So you're going to have somebody there who didn't get pinned at all, and they still lose. And that's that whole type of match is just to protect one of the guys. Like Brock Lesnar at the WrestleMania, Roman got pinned. Seth Rollins pinned Roman, not Brock Lesnar. So Brock Lesnar never took a pinfall. It's just a way to keep a fall off of a main guy. And it's too game. The match psychology though suffers so much as a result because there's no real incentive to team like that and take breaks and let two guys work because, all right, well, one of them gets eliminated and then I can jump in. You can't. At least, I mean, that's realistically the way that psychology works for me. It doesn't, a triple threat just, it doesn't work that much for me.
Well, I will say this. I mean, the fact that they teased two triple threat matches on Raw, I'm glad that, you know, even though this is a third one, it's the only one we're getting. The last thing I want to see is like two or three or multiple triple threat matches.
That's the next pay-per-view theme. It's called Triple Threat. And every single match is a triple threat match.
Ooh. That sounds horrible.
You know. Trio galore.
Well, so that's SmackDown, and so now that's giving us a place. We'll see where they're heading with that. So it's exciting for right now. And thank goodness there's no football on Tuesdays. So that hopefully will help SmackDown, and it'll be interesting to see what the ratings look like after the fact that the Raw ratings were all below 3 million. Yeah, for Monday night,
and those weren't even good games.
Yeah, no, I didn't realize.
First game.
Well, the good thing is that there's no good games next week either. So,
I mean, that shit's all the work, so it doesn't matter. I mean, you know,
Danny Live.
Oh, pro football's definitely a work.
Yeah,
I believe this whole humanity thing is a work.
Humanity's a work, yes. You're saying?
Humanity.
Our whole existence is in nothing but a work.
Well, if you're religious, wouldn't you believe that?
It's predetermined by somebody else. It's under their hands, not your own.
Right.
I guess.
All right, so Monday Night Raw.
We're getting philosophical here.
Yeah, that's definitely the wrong show.
And that's what you get here at FOW Radio.
Existentialism.
Yeah, available on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Let's get back on track. Monday Night Raw. We had Nia Jax against Alicia Fox was one of the lesser highlights, I'd say. It ended in a no contest after Nia Jax basically destroyed Fox. I'm not a fan of Alicia Fox, so anytime she gets destroyed by somebody, I appreciate it.
Testify.
In that part match, though, like, okay, I want to just mention something. So when they're on the outside, Alicia comes at her, like, hard. And I think it was kind of like Alicia knew that, you know, like, she was going to be put through that wall. So she's like, okay, dude, I'm going to come out and I'm going to throw some, you know, I'm going to throw some leather. Because, like, when she first comes out with that diving kick, like, it smashes Nia Jax right in the face. And then she gets on and starts wailing on her. And I'm like, she kind of knew that since she was going through the wall, she was going to stiff Nia and give her some shots, too. I thought that was kind of funny.
Can I say what one of my favorite parts of the show was? The highlight reel. Now, I'm not the biggest Jericho fan. I'm not even the smallest Jericho fan.
Are you a recovered Jericho-holic then?
I think he's been no longer, quite a few years.
You no longer have to go to meetings to talk about your addiction to Jericho-hol.
Yeah, I think that ended in like 1999.
Wow.
Right when he debuted in WWE.
Like, man. Okay, so maybe later. Yeah, as soon as that year was over, I think like October, November. Well, no, I take it back. I really enjoyed 2000 when he was making fun of Stephanie. So, yeah, after 2001, I was over it.
Oh, man.
So I only gave him like 3 years. After that, I was done.
You've been in recovery for a long time, man. You're about to get your 16-year chip, dude. That's good. Congratulations.
Thanks. Appreciate it. You know, I'm trying. So, but here, I almost fell off the wagon because I actually enjoyed this.
It's a struggle every day, I know.
And, you know, well, Sami's saying, I think, you know, he's great at what he does. And that this was, you know, looks like that's where we're heading. We have the match, Jericho versus Sami Zayn at Clash of Champions.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, so we expect Sami Zayn to lose here.
That doesn't involve a championship.
Well, no. So the plan, I think, would be Sami Zayn will lose to Jericho, and then Sami Zayn will go on to headline the next couple of pay-per-views for the challenge for Universal title. I mean, you know, if you're following the trajectory, right, of AJ Styles.
Yeah,
that's what happened.
Or if Kevin Owens, a couple pay-per-views ago, lost to Sami Zayn in the final match they were ever going to have.
Yeah, but he was talking about Jericho specifically. Right. AJ Styles lost to Jericho at WrestleMania, like we talked about 20 minutes ago.
Right. No, it's the same. I mean, creatively, it's the same thing. You lose a high-profile match, but they need somebody in that spot, and then realize that, you know, it's got to be one of the guys you already beat. It's the same gimmick.
Yeah. Now, how about the ladies' match? The women's match is Sasha Banks defeated Bayley and Dana Brooke. Although, if this was planned to have been a double pin, it would have worked perfectly. Because Sasha Banks pinned herself. The referee didn't see it, thankfully.
Or he didn't count it. You know, I mean, whatever. It's a work. Come on.
So, I mean, you could easily go back next week and say, well, we reviewed the tape, Sasha, you pinned yourself, so now it's a triple threat match.
Now Dana Brooke's the winner.
Right. Well, true. Hey, that could have worked too.
Come on. Dana Brooke was the only one who didn't get pinned. Two people get pinned, they eliminate each other, one person remains, it's Dana, she goes to get the belt. Come on.
Now that's quite a thought I did not have on my head here. So this is why we have Danny on the show. I'm the beauty, he's the brains.
I am nothing. I don't need to comment to that, do I?
Well, you know, I mean, I was still going for that. You're the I still don't have a specific job for you, but we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll find your worth at some point.
Yeah, I already have an intern job elsewhere.
Now, as somebody's trying to warm up a late meal, I do want to talk about the best of seven series here. Cesaro uses the ropes to defeat Sheamus, and now Sheamus leads the series 3-2, which I'm pretty sure means that Cesaro's going to win next Monday, and then Clash of Champions, we're going to have the seventh match. I think that's the most obvious thing.
That's what we hope they'll do, and not do something dumb. I mean, obviously they've put it so that the seventh match will be at Clash of Champions.
I've seen enough matches of these two right now that I'm basically over it, but you know, I can't wait for Clash of Champions, so this can be over.
I'm really hopeful that they do something with Cesaro after this, and it's a springboard to be able to challenge or to get hope. The picture. I mean, I would love to see how awesome would some AJ versus Cesaro matches over on SmackDown be?
Those would be fun, but I don't think they're gonna move them either. They need the baby faces so they can job to the top heels.
But I mean, Cesaro should be a top guy.
He should.
I mean, that whole Cesaro section thing, the C-section thing that happened and still happens a little bit. That was totally generic. It was totally done by fans. When something like that happens, you gotta take advantage.
Oh, absolutely. Now,
but he wasn't the guy that you were supposed to cheer then, so they didn't do anything with him. They tried to bury him like they did with Dolph Ziggler, and now we see that what almost irreparable damage that's done to Ziggler.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so great. It's so great when they fight their own fans. Like Rollins as a babyface is going to be less over than he was if they had just, you know, they had built him up to be this big babyface with his comeback story. He nails Reigns, and then the next night he's got to cut this big promo. Well, no, I'm not a babyface. I'm a heel. Great. So that took 2 months or however long to go ahead and actually turn him face, which is what he should have been all along. You know, they're creative. I'm not as complimentary now as I was earlier on.
Well, I don't think many people are. But before we get too far ahead with the non-compliments, Epico defeated Enzo thanks to help from Primo. I mean, they're still at least protecting Cass, so yay for that. And then Kevin Owens defeats Roman Reigns, and the main event for Clash of Champions remains Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins. And of course, the big thing here was the return of Rusev, as he cost Reigns the match, and it looks like we may be getting Roman Reigns versus Rusev for the U.S. title at Clash of Champions. He's
completely
back from his
fine with that feud.
Yep,
completely fine with that feud,
especially if Rusev wins.
Yeah, go ahead and move Roman down the card a little bit and let him get a little bit of sympathy when he and have him build his way back up. Let him get, you know, if you're not going to turn him heel, which maybe they will because they did the Uso thing. But if you're not going to turn him heel, at least move him down and let him get some sympathy and don't make him friggin' Superman. You know, figure out an organic a way for fans to get behind him, because people will get behind him. People booed The Rock. People hated The Rock.
I still hate The Rock. I always have.
Yeah, Danny does.
You're such a heel, Danny.
Danny does not like one.
And one of my friends made me sit through Fast 7, and it was terrible.
Oof.
That only increased it when he like rock bottomed a dude through the glass table or something. I was like, really? Come on, this
look, terrible. It works in real life.
It's a great, the Uranagi is an amazing move in legit fights.
Well, I think the technical name is rock bottom.
Yeah, that's, you're probably right.
So now coming off this Raw show, are you guys excited about Clash of Champions? Are you guys looking forward to Clash of Champions?
You know, with the pay-per-view quality, especially with what they just had in Backlash, which I was excited about and was really happy with and ended up being really happy with, the pay-per-views are mostly fine. It's the It's the creative on the 5 hours a week that just sometimes is just such a long slog with stuff that's definitely not over. A cough, Darren Young, Titus O'Neil being pushed out there and on television. When you could just give guys longer matches, make them work these 2-3 minute style. Something that has been obvious when I've seen them live is you get people who are into the entrances. They have these long, elaborate entrances, and then the wrestling match is the filler.
Yeah.
And the crowd is down. And then for the finish, they come up again, you know, and then there's going to be more entrances with loud music. The wrestling is supposed to be what gets the big pops, not the big entrances. So I'm pretty sure there was a point in there, but I am looking forward to the pay-per-view. Yes, it's a good main event.
How about you, Danny?
I mean,
yeah, I could see. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I'm intrigued at least to see if they try to give a different feel and flow to the first Raw, you know, to the first Raw event, kind of how they did the SmackDown event. I felt this because, you know, as we talked, the matches were longer. Nothing really felt rushed. There wasn't piles and piles of filler, you know. The show almost had kind of a different feel and a different flow to it. So I'm wondering if they try to do something to create an even different flow for the Raw pay-per-views so that they feel different than just a regular pay-per-view and or just a regular episode of Raw.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of a trend they were falling into, was the live event specials were pretty much formatted and felt identical to the weekly shows.
Very true.
Well, with the pay-per-view, as long as they don't have that 15-20 minute Stephanie and Paul segment where they just job out everybody on the roster and make them kowtow to Stephanie like they do on the weekly TVs, I think Clash Champions will be good.
So what I'm also looking forward to is the Cruiserweights debuting next week. So that's going to be big. And I can't wait to see some of our personal favorites in Gargano, Ciampa, Alexander, just to name a few. It's going to be a fabulous division. I do want to take a look at the finals of the Cruiserweight Classic and the 2-hour special happening this Wednesday. Before that, I do want to go back to NXT last week's episode. We had TM61 defeating Tony Nese and Aria Davari, who were making, I'm not sure if this is a debut per se. I mean, is their first match on NXT, but it could just be a one-time appearance. We shall see. Then Asuka, had an interview and put out a challenge out there. She doesn't think there's anyone to challenge her for the women's title. Then next we got a possible challenger in Ember Moon, who defeated Aaliyah Vaughn. Austin Aries defeated Andrade Cien Almas. And the NXT champion, Shinsuke Nakamura, defeated Steve Cutler. So that was a pretty good episode of NXT to me. I really enjoyed it. It's making more of the combination of the better known names and some of the lesser known names. So it's a good combination. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they have in store next 2 months before the next takeover event. It should definitely be a good few months of a lot of good matches, I hope. And, you know, whatever talent from the Cruiserweight Classic that does not make the main roster could be put on here. So that it also makes for wonderful matchups.
That's a good point.
What I'd heard about the Cruiserweight division is that it would be featured on Raw, but they would also be featured on NXT as well. So I think that it's kind of I don't know if it's they'll kind of start some Cruiserweight people in NXT and then bump them up to Raw, or some of them will kind of float back and forth depending on the matches. But that's what I heard, is they would be on NXT as well as Raw for the time being. So I don't know how that's going to play out. I guess we'll have to see.
Gotcha. Well, that definitely makes sense. So that's NXT, and I'm, again, looking forward to see what happens between now and the next TakeOver event. But now let's take a look at the Cruiserweight Classic, as the finale is this Wednesday, and man, what matchups do we have? In the semifinals, we have Zack Sabre Jr. going 1-on-1 against Grand Metalik as Britain meets Mexico, and then in a battle between Japan and the Philippines, we have Kota Ibushi against TJ Perkins. Now, the winners of these matches will then go on to the finals, which has a 60-minute time limit. Well, also scheduled for the show is Ciampa and Gargano versus The Revival.
Really?
Yes. That was also a match that was made on NXT last week.
And then, have there been any other matches announced?
So far, just the four of those.
I guess I'm sure between the semis and the finals.
Because they could, if they want to do. If they're just going to have it as a 2-hour live special, I think a 4-match show is great. I just said earlier my favorite In Your House was one that only had 4 matches on it. It gives everything time to breathe. But there is always, they got all those cruiserweight guys. So many of them are in town. They could go ahead and throw them out there in some sort of, tag team deal, similar to what PWG does when they have the big shows and they have the extra guys. So we could always see some sort of Young Bucks versus Ricochet type match like PWG would do.
Yeah, you could see a couple of filling matches there. Who do you guys have?
If you can tell, I just ordered Bola. Yeah. So I've been reading about it.
So who do you guys have, Ibushi or Perkins?
From the very early thoughts of the CWC, my final was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Kota Ibushi, with Kota Ibushi winning. And it seems like it's getting pretty darn close to that happening.
Yeah. I had the same finalists, except for I have Sabre winning.
What edged me over was that Kota Ibushi was signed before the CWC even started.
But let's remember, he's not fully signed.
Ibushi is, yeah.
He did not agree to a full time deal. He agreed to a per night deal.
Okay.
Because he wants the freedom to go back to Japan.
Yeah, he's willing to work with him, but he's not going to be a full timer. So
neither is Zack Sabre. He didn't. Right. They offered him a contract, and he said no.
He said we'll talk next year.
He said, brain check.
All right, Matt. Who are your two finalists, and who are you going with as the winner? As you heard our picks.
All right. What I would like to see is Ibushi win the whole thing.
And who would you defeat?
That's a tough one.
Well, you got between Metalik and Sabre.
Because I just think the Japan Mexico thing would be kind of a cool deal, and Metalik is going to be one of the stars of the division, where Zack Sabre is not. Really, I'll go ahead and make a prediction that it's going to be Ibushi and Metalik.
All right.
Because they don't like to push guys they don't have under contract. I mean, that's something that they don't like, is they don't want to push. Like, for instance, with Goldberg the last several weeks making all sorts of headlines, the WWE is kind of annoyed at that because he's talking about a match that they can't make happen. So why talk about it? And if Zack Sabre Jr., if he doesn't have a deal, well, he's not going to be in the cruiserweight division.
I heard some people say the same about when the thing first started. I was talking to somebody, and he said he thought Rich Swann was going to go all the way and win it, because Rich Swann at the time, at the start of it, was the only guy under contract. And so his thing was, why would you have anybody else win who's not under contract with you?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, can I say that TJ Perkins and Rich Swann had a great match last week? I mean, I think all quarterfinal matches were great, but those two had a great match. as did Noam Dar and Zack Sabre Jr. But that, I like
that finisher, that finishing submission, the variation that Zack Sabre Jr. did, when he pulled his legs together to pull Noam Dar's arms together, it looked disgusting. It looked like Noam Dar's arm popped out of his shoulder.
I was hurting.
I looked at him. And then Zach started headbutting his shoulder. And
right,
I was
like, after he called the match.
Yeah.
That was a crazy visual. That was a crazy visual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm psyched for what happens. And you know, it doesn't have to be 2 hours, of course, because it's on the network. They can go as long as they want. But I really don't care who wins, honestly. If everybody were signed, if everyone were signed, I think honestly I would like for Ibushi to win. It's just hard. We know Metalik is moving his family to America. You know, we know that he's been doing that. We know that TJ Perkins is signed.
Yeah, I mean, Metalik is also going to be part of the Cruiserweight division.
Yeah, he is. So. He's actually in the process of relocating his family.
Yeah, so it's just pretty cool how, you know, all these talent, and TJ Perkins as well going to be part of the Cruiserweight division. He and Johnny Gargano had their last matches in Evolve this past weekend. So that's pretty cool. To me, I'm so stoked about the Cruiserweight division and what will happen with this Wednesday. It has me extra stoked because this is something that we've been, since they announced this tournament and then they started putting out all these names, and we were like, they gotta be out of their minds. And I can say this honestly and see if you guys disagree with me, but you know, in my opinion, the Cruiserweight Classic was absolutely the better show between them and the Super J Cup, which returned after a 6-7 year hiatus.
From what I read about the Super J Cup, it was not great because of the attendance and who was there, and so that was a big factor in the Cruiserweight Classic.
I don't pay attention
crowd
to attendance.
Helps make that show.
I don't pay attention to these kind of things. They don't affect
my crowd
pressure of viewing.
Well, I think when you have a crowd who's into it, it enhances it.
Yeah. Like, well, keep in mind that they speak Japanese, so I have it on mute.
But the people wrestling, when the crowd's into it,
watching, I mute it.
Really?
That's weird. I never do that.
Keep in mind, I didn't watch the J Cup. That's just what I know. It was universally disappointing, and that's why what I had read.
Watched it live at between 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning.
That's insane.
Because Patrick has that kind of time.
Yep.
When a crowd's into something, it fires up the competitors, fires up the wrestlers to do better, to do more, to get more involved. It gets their adrenaline pumping, and they put on better performances than when the crowd's sitting there, like, not caring, not engaged.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I thought, because, you know, okay, I mute the show sometimes, but sometimes I don't. And, I would say I probably had it muted half the time, but I don't think, you know, the fans were not into the Super J Cup. I thought that people were into it. I just think that if you compare names of who was in the Cruiserweight Classic in comparison to who it was the Super J Cup, especially when you know the history of the Super J Cup and all the names that have been there, you know, I think, you know, it lacks something in comparison to. I think that WWE did their best to try and get the best not under contract wrestlers, you know, cruiserweights in the world.
I think they did a really good job. I mean, they were trying to not just get the best in the world, but they were trying to be as spread out from as many countries as they could, which I give them a lot of credit for trying to expose. I mean, if you have a guy that you take a look at and he's a dud That's fine. You took a look at him, you know, to hope, you know, to open up and see what other talent is out there worldwide, you know, who's not known even on any sort of real and indie, you know, in the States on any sort of indie scene. So that's, I mean, that's what they were going for. And it was pretty good. I mean, most of the matches were at least good. There was a few of the guys who we hadn't heard of who really didn't need to be in there. But that was only a couple matches. And with the TV editing, enough was covered up. So I think it was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Cruiserweight Classic's been my favorite wrestling thing this year. And I really hope that Raw takes advantage of what they've been handed.
Now,
absolutely.
Before the next Dusty Tag Team Classic, are we going to see a women's classic?
I would like a women's classic. I don't know if it needs to be 32 competitors. I think they could probably do it with 16.
I guess how many, I don't know how it works. You know, can they get women from Shimmer, and can they get women from,
of course, they're working
Japan?
With Evolve. So yes,
right. Okay. If they can get women from Shimmer, and if they can get, how about Stardom in Japan? Would they be able to get them? I'm literally asking because I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, at Shimmer, they're not exclusively signed.
Right.
They're not exclusively signed with Shimmer or Shine or WSU. They treat those just like they're AAW or Evolve or Beyond or whomever. Okay. They're not. These people are under a per appearance contract basis.
I would like to. I would like for it to happen with a huge Japanese influence.
Okay.
Because that's the thing that bugs me the most is about the whole Divas, you know, women's revolution thing. The idea that, you know, WWE is really not ahead of the curve. They're 25 years behind it. Yeah. And they're trying to, that's what's really bugged me about it.
Well, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do for next week. And this is something, if Matt, if you can join us next week, it'll be great. As we look at preview Clash of Champions, as well as review the finals of the Cruiserweight Classic, I want us to, from now to next week, to come up with 16 names. And let's see if we can put 16 names and book our own wish list of the Women's Wrestling Classic, or whatever they would call it.
How many from NXT are we allowed to take?
Excluding the champion, 4.
No, Austin.
Okay. But you can take up to 4,
right,
that are currently under contract with NXT WWE. Okay.
Yes. So 4 from NXT, and then 12 from outside.
So how many guys were NXT? I mean, Gargano and Ciampa. We know they were not really NXT guys because they weren't under contract. Right, but they had different contracts.
At the start of it, Rich Swann was the only guy under an actual developmental NXT contract.
Okay, because that's the whole thing that, like, Gargano and Ciampa do in their final indies, because now they're going to be real NXT guys. They're basically free agents just brought in. That's what I meant. I'm still thinking of them as NXT guys.
But they were on a per appearance basis. They could still do shows outside of WWE. Rich Swann was the only one on an exclusive contract.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree with.
I mean, as it went along, they saw the performances and the reactions and things, and started signing people or offering contracts. But yeah, when it started, the only one who was under a full contract was Rich Swann, and he had made a couple NXT appearances, but had, you know, they hadn't really done much with him.
As we're wrapping the show up, Matt, your thoughts on CM Punk's loss at UFC 203?
I have no comment.
That means that, Matt, you jumped for joy and were happy in the misery that followed for CM Punk and his loss. We understand that. Well, Danny, is that what you expected? Did you not care? And do you wish to see him back in the octagon or any other cage by that in the matter?
I mean, I was disappointed by it. I mean, he didn't even get a strike off. He literally went and in and, you know, and just got kind of molded into putty by by this guy and choked out in about 2 minutes. But I mean, that's the advantage of somebody who's been training in a discipline for 10 years versus somebody who's been doing something else for 10 plus years. And a guy who CM Punk never claimed himself to be a natural athlete, where these guys who start doing mixed martial arts in various forms at very young ages, you know, wrestling in high school and these kind of things, they're natural athletes. Their bodies are conditioned and toned for such. CM Punk never did any of that stuff in high school or you know, any kind of leagues really seriously as an athlete. He was always wrestling. And so he was at large disadvantages on that, and then his age and all this, but it was disappointing, because it's disappointing for wrestling fans as well, because the smug mainstream sports fans just go, oh yeah, it's because they're too busy doing fake stuff. They're not real athletes like everybody else. You know, it shines a crummy light on there. And I mean, hell, it made them a lot of money, which is the whole point. They said that they probably had twice as many pay-per-view buys as were originally estimated. And CM Punk made over $500,000 to lose in less than 2 minutes. Yeah. You could pay me $500,000 and, you know, and I'll go let some dude rumble me around and choke me out.
Oh yeah, I'll take a dive for have a meal. Absolutely. I wouldn't
take a dive. I'd actually fight. I'd actually try to fight back.
Not me. I was like, you pin me out. I'm just, you know, whatever. I tap.
You're like a turtle though. If you get knocked on your back, you're not getting back up. Absolutely. I tell you.
So I was expecting more, but you know, you couldn't have a lot of high expectations. Somebody with so little experience. I hope that he'll give it another shot. Most likely not in the UFC.
I think he will. It'll be in the UFC. I just don't think it'll be on the main card. I think it'll be on like the before the pay per view starts card.
We shall see. So that's our thoughts on CM Punk. And with that is the show today. You can check us out on Facebook at FOW Radio. Follow us on Twitter at FOW Radio. Matt's on Twitter at Matt the Mouth. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F and Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. Subscribe to the feed on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Podbean. Soon to come on Google Play at some point this year. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.